The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter/X at Bastards_Boston. I'm your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, and Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. Jeremy, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you on Twitter/X?
Now that I've had a chance to vent on Medium, and you can find me on Twitter at JTShill20.
And for the record, Terry, you've lost some of your ammunition because he knows his handle now. And Terry, where can the fans find you on Twitter/X?
Jeremy's always right where I want him, but I can be found at CushmanMLB, and we're on Instagram. Find our blog. By the time this episode drops, there'll probably be some more content on there. That's Bastards of Boston Substack. If you type your email into it, you'll get notifications when we do post. And can't wait to do some hot takes.
That's exactly what this episode is all about. So bring us some hot takes. Jeremy is going to be batting leadoff. Jeremy, hit us first.
So this comes from a usual suspect. I find him a friend of the program. He tweets at me every morning after every recording. And frankly, I look forward to it because the back and forth is entertaining and he doesn't seem to take it personally. But Johnny Fontaine, here I come. Here's the tweet. They are an overachieving young core, but still very flawed roster. Need to sell to acquire assets. Now, the first sentence I agree with, but how do you say that there's a flawed roster, but let's sell and not buy? It makes no sense. So, Johnny, because I'm going to get a tweet on this, let me go further into why I think this is absolutely nonsensical. We have a balloon of prospects, okay? And I'm not going to go into like a complete roster breakdown because I think that would take the whole 30 minutes. But we have established core, okay? Devers, Cassis, Rafaela, Duran, Abreu, Wong. So we're taking pitching out of this because the pitching depth is terrible. We only have a couple of spots. And we have all these prospects. Not all of them is going to play at the big league level for the Red Sox. Now, we have a good problem, which is we're achieving a level of success that's really a year away than predicted. It doesn't make any sense just to delay the buy because we're a year early. No, we're a year early. You have to buy a year early. And the balloon of prospects is exactly why that's the only rational way for Breslow and management to handle this deadline. Package guys, go supplement the roster and go compete now, because the farther you get in 2024 is the farther you're going to expect to get in 2025 and beyond. Now, and that's not the only reason. Playing even meaningful playoff games into late September, or having the benefit of getting into the playoffs, only strengthens the young core's ability to learn how to win and be competitive on a year-in, year-out basis. It makes absolutely no sense, unless we get swept by the Rockies and get swept by the Yankees and we're back at 500. Assuming that doesn't happen, it makes literally no sense to sell, because all you're doing is adding prospects to a pool that already doesn't fit the number of big league needs that you have. It doesn't make any logical sense. You're overachieving. You're a year early. Go package prospects. Hopefully you make the right call. You know, keep the guys around you envision being on the big league roster, package the ones you don't, and go make this team as competitive as you can in 2024.
Terrence.
So I get why Johnny, you know, I get why he's content to just sell. I get it. The chances of us winning a championship are fairly slim. However, let's just look at the scenarios real quick. If you stand pat, you lose. There's no benefit to standing pat. If you trade for rentals, I think you lose. I don't think nothing is really gained long term, and even in the short term, like I said, I don't think we're winning a championship anyway. But if you trade from your surplus and get some long term assets, and not even long term, like midterm assets, the next 2 to 4 years, guys controllable for the next 2 to 4 years, that's the only scenario where you win no matter what, because you're going to be set up better in the second half to make that postseason run. But if you miss, you're set up for next season, or at least partially. That's one less thing you have to do this winter. That has to be the objective here if you're Craig Breslow. That's the only universally positive outcome here. If he wants to flip the narrative and prove that he can hang with some of the other top executives throughout the sport, he's got a great mentor, by the way, Theo Epstein, seems to have ownership's, you know, goodwill here in terms of adding. He should be able to execute here. He has to execute.
Jeremy, go ahead. I know you wanted to add one more thing.
Yeah, Sam Kennedy's lying. He's an absolute scumbag, confirmed. He goes on Nesson last week and he says, we're going to buy. He's such a scumbag. It's such a deflection onto Breslow when they don't. And how is Breslow okay with that? If he does get this team in the playoffs, despite what I'm sure management's going to put him in with regards to limited flexibility, I hope for him and his family, he goes and pivots into the next role and goes to an organization that's going to support him, or not even support him. Just be honest with him. Tell him what it is. And that's it. They are going in to radio and to Nesson, and they're lying through their teeth, and it's going to make Breslow look terrible. Because I think most fans are going to say, well, Kennedy said they're going to buy, but then we didn't buy. Yeah, but you don't know what's happening in the meetings where, like, you can buy, but you can't add money. How does that make any sense? You can buy, but no Teal, no Meyer, no York. You know, like, if they're doing those things to Breslow, but they're going out and saying it's not dissimilar to what's happening with the election. It's insanity. Everything that comes out of Sam Kennedy's mouth is presumed a lie until proven otherwise with me. That guy's a scumbag piece of blank. He really is.
So you don't believe that Breslow will be able to at least spend up to the luxury tax? Because I feel like he probably will be given that permission.
No, I'd be shocked. What the preseason number was 225, Terry?
That's where we're at currently.
Yeah.
Oh, are you talking about the luxury tax threshold? Because that
no, I'm talking about in the in the spring training. They said that the team's budget was 225 for the year.
No, I don't think that's what it was last year. I think they actually said where the hard line was. They just said that it would be lower, and it was.
What's the luxury tax currently set at?
237, and we're at about 223, I think, at the moment.
Well, okay, so that's 14 million, which should be good for 2 to 3 players because you're only paying about what
a third.
A third, and like if you go get a guy like Turner, the Blue Jays are going to eat money. I'll tell you here, I'll put it to you this way. If they don't spend to the threshold, they were never truly all in on buying. And if it's an expiring contract with no penalties moving forward, then I think that's even a bigger problem. If they don't spend to the threshold, it'll confirm that Kennedy's a piece of blank and he's a scumbag line.
Well,
piece of blank.
Let's have Charlie give his take.
Yeah. So real talk, Terry, you already brought up something that I want to talk about. I will no longer accept rentals as an acceptable solution to the problem, because if you continue to do rentals year in and year out, you're basically saying, yeah, we're kind of trying. We're not really that committed, but we want to shake things up, and that's cool. But like, let me give you an example. Do you go on Tinder to find your wife, or do you go on Tinder to just fool around? Honestly, I mean, that's literally what I want to ask them. Like, are you serious or are you not serious? Put some skin in the game. All right, cool. We're going to get, you know, absolutely destroyed if the solution is, yeah, we'll pick up this guy. And this guy just, you know, there's Ty France from Seattle who's about to get, you know, become a free agent. He's going to get DFA'd. He's not going to accept an opportunity in the minors. But it's just, I'm not going to accept rentals as a solution for this. You have an overachieving roster to some degree. We've been able to catch some teams at the right point of the year, but this is like, if anybody thinks that we can just, or we do that whole, we're going to buy and sell again, unacceptable, won't have it. Jeremy, yeah, go ahead.
I have a question for you, Charlie.
Sure. I'm down for it. I'm here for you.
All right. It's very specific. If the rentals are Turner and Eovaldi, do you feel the same way?
Turner, yes. Eovaldi, kinda. No, I want a commitment. I want players to be here. If you're going to try and tell us we want to build and we want to go for it and we're going to have people towards the future, then be here for the future. Don't be here for a cup of coffee. I don't want it. I understand where you're coming from. I think that's valid. I think it's cute. But Eovaldi and Turner shouldn't be compared. Turner's 39. Eovaldi, I forget how old Eovaldi is. And I don't know what he would cost in relation to Turner. If you just want to add Turner as the short-term rental piece because we want him in the clubhouse, he's a leader, the guy is a captain without the title, and you know maybe that will help – you know, get even more out of these young kids. Okay, I'm willing to make an exception, but that shouldn't be, you know, the end result, like all short-term rentals. I would love to get Eovaldi to come back for longer than just a couple of months, but I realistically, I don't know what Texas is going to want for that. And I'm curious to know, before we do anything, I think it's going to depend on the next two series. If, you know, if we do well against Colorado and we do, you know, decently well against New York, but guys, I'm not confident against New York. I'm really not. And I'm thankful that we're not facing Freeland in Colorado. So we're talking about a bunch of hypotheticals right now. It could get ugly real soon. Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I think if you have two, three guys that fit specific needs, and Turner and Eovaldi do, I'd obviously prefer a lefty starter, but they're going to improve your ability to win games in August and September this year, and they're not going to cost you anything. Eovaldi is going to cost you a prospect. Turner may not even cost you a prospect. So, and certainly not a high-level prospect with Eovaldi. It's not going to take Teal, Anthony, Meyer, York, I don't think. If ownership says to Breslow, you can buy, but you can't take away from the top six rated prospects, this makes all the sense in the world to me. You're still giving this team a chance to compete. And I don't like the I don't see this team in the World Series narrative, because they've been the best team in baseball for over a month before the Dodgers series. And last year is the perfect example of teams that weren't on the radar at all that wound up playing in the World Series and ultimately winning it. So I'm not saying they're going to win a World Series. They're clearly not like anywhere near the betting favorite, but to say they can't, baseball is a finicky sport with the postseason, and currently with the format changing and the way it is, I don't rule it out. I absolutely do not rule it out. So if you can add guys like that and strengthen and lengthen your roster, I think it makes sense. It's not my preferred method, though, Charlie. Let me be very clear. My preferred method is to go package guys, get a Vlad, get a Rosarena, who's a guy that I like, you know, and go do what Terry's suggesting. But I'm saying, if you're limited by management, I do too. He's an electric factory, and I love watching the guy play, and I'd love him in Boston, and I think he fits a need. So right-handed back, corner outfielder, you know, it makes Ref Schneider, O'Neill expendable, but that's my preferred method, 100%. I'm just saying, if that's not something they can do or ownership limits their ability to do it, rentals are acceptable to me if it's specific fitting needs.
Terry, why don't you go ahead before I torch that?
No, go ahead.
Okay, great. So we're talking about how the Red Sox are one of the hottest teams in baseball. If we're going to say before the Dodgers series, let's just do this. Let's say we start at June 25th. The Red Sox were, 5-4, 7-4, 7-5, 8-5, 8-6, 10-6. Counting the Dodgers series, we're 10-9. We're a game above 500. If we're believing in rentals, and I respect the take, but I'm going to challenge you. When has a team ever succeeded by just getting rentals every single year on a consistent basis? That's like, damn, I think I have a hole there. Let me patch it up with some tape. And then the tape comes undone. I'll just go get some more tape. You're not really fixing the problem. You're just putting a Band-Aid on it. That's like, you know, no, this is not the Titanic, and we're not putting a Band-Aid on the Titanic. It's nothing like that. But we're going to try to add these pieces that may not be the best pieces for the long term. They're going to be there for the short term. Do you think that the Red Sox with those pieces are going to be able to beat the Orioles? Do you think that they're going to be able to beat the Yankees? And that's just the American League. Do you think that they're going to be able to beat the Orioles or the Yankees? No. Okay, cool. Okay.
I think Yankees continue to go in the wrong direction, my friend. They lost again
the Orioles
today.
Yeah, they did. What about the Orioles?
No, I don't.
Okay, cool.
No, I
don't. Okay, cool. So then what the hell are we talking about here? Because that's just the American League. And then you have to deal with the Phillies, the Dodgers, who just spanked us, the Brewers, who are doing great. I'm not going to say the CUBS, but, you know, deep down, if they go all in and they come back with a vengeance, you know, I can't yet. But there are a handful of teams that would demolish us in a five-game series. Forget seven. But please, Jeremy, go ahead.
Well, first of all, we belonged on the field with the Dodgers. Anybody disagree with that? We had a chance to win two of the three games and probably should have won two of the three games. So anyone who say they're going to demolish us?
Yes, because of the fact that their entire team is basically cut in half because of injuries. They have seven starters on IL and or have been demoted, including
part of baseball,
Mookie Betts.
Charlie.
That's part of baseball. But have you ever seen seven starting pitchers on the IL? one of your best players on the team also on the IL on the offensive side, that's insane. Like, that's crazy bad luck for the
Dodgers. And what's to say the Orioles aren't in the same position in 30 days and they're not as good as we think they are because they get
what's to say that we're not either?
Bug. I don't disagree with it, but you got to give yourself a chance to be there. And by the way, this team is it. The rentals make sense if ownership says, don't you dare spend prospects. At least go and get, like, you Turner, you could get just by paying a salary.
Correct. I agree. I don't disagree. I absolutely agree with that.
This team is, like, when we talk about baseball as a Red Sox fan, we're like 60% big league club and then 40% what's in the minors. It's everywhere. It's so prevalent. And so if they're not going to move minor league assets, then go get rentals. At least don't give up on 2024. It doesn't make sense. And again, I'm not saying go win the World Series, but let's say they advance and play like in an ALDS. What does that mean for players like Rafaela, Duran, Wong, Cassis, if he's back? Devers has already been there, so he's different, but he's the only one. What does it mean for Houck to pitch in those type of innings? Crawford to pitch in those type of innings? And I'm saying they lose, but then they have the experience. And that is a big deal. I think that's a huge factor. So I don't think on any way you should give up on this year. If rentals get you to the spot where Houck is pitching postseason innings, go get him that experience. 100%.
Terry, anything else you want to add to that?
Just a tidbit, at least. As of right now, it doesn't look like the Rangers are going to be sellers based on what they've said in the last few days. They're getting some guys back. I don't know if one of those guys is Jake DeGrom, but it's been at least a year or so since he's had his Tommy John, so I don't see why he wouldn't necessarily be able to throw some innings here coming up. They did get Scherzer back, and they're only five out of the division right now, which as of this weekend is led by the Houston Astros. They are in first place. So
right. DeGrom a couple of days ago was throwing and was adding a couple of curveballs and or sliders. So it looks like he's trending in the right direction as well.
So probably late August, he might come back. All right. So who knows, but I guess like I could handle a rental pitcher, but if we're going to acquire a bat, I want that to be a controllable guy for sure. Because with the rental, you're getting Giolito back. So, yeah, you'll potentially lose your rental, once October hits or November, if we're that fortunate. But and then Giolito comes back in and takes that pitcher's place. Having said that, though, you're probably losing Pivetta, so still ideally it does make more sense to get a controllable pitcher. Another guy that's kind of on the radar as well, everybody's talking about Garrett Crochet. I mean, he would be the prize of this trade deadline. Eric Fetty is on the same team as Crochet. Quality pitcher. You're not going to get the strikeouts that you will with Crochet, but you're going to get quality innings. So I'd almost rather go that route if it's cheaper. But it is what it is. And
It's cheaper?
What's that?
If it's cheaper, Fetty's absolutely going to be cheaper than Crochet. Crochet, you're getting a lot of toys. It's
exactly.
Christmas for Chicago. Yeah, 100%.
Right.
That's if we're going the rental route.
So I would go with Fetty, but... having said that, I won't complain if we do get Crochet. But just to reiterate, the one scenario where you don't lose in the long run, whether you make the playoffs or not, is if you get controllable guys. I won't. My criticism of Breslow, if he goes that route, will be far less than if he blows it. And I'm probably going to put it on Breslow here. If he can't get it done, I think it's on him. I really do. Because I think he's going to be able to spend up to the luxury tax or within a million or two of it. And we'll have an idea of like if player so and so, if let's just take Crochet, if the Orioles get him and it's a lesser trade package than what we were expecting to give, I'm going to be pissed because we probably could have got it done too. So we'll know, we'll be able to gauge Breslow's performance based on the other trade packages we see being given up for, you know, all the players that are going to be acquired.
It's going to be interesting no matter what. But thank you very much for that hot take. We spent a lot of time on that and it was valid. It was great. Our second hot take is going to be, Terry, why don't you lead us off with yours?
Yeah. So this one comes from Jim. I want to say we've done at least one hot take from him, but if we haven't, he, comes from Buffalo. So, that's kind of an interesting market because you got two New York teams. You also got Toronto nearby. So, Nice to have a Red Sox fan coming from that area, but he's kind of responding to a tweet that I had, I think on Thursday or Friday, and he says, I'm totally on board with bringing Tito back once Cora bolts to go elsewhere for a crap load of money. Now, the context here, in that tweet, I mentioned Francona isn't closing the door on coming back. He more likely than not will manage again. He basically left the sport to focus on his health. And I haven't seen any interviews in the last few months, but it did seem like last I checked, he was trending in the right direction. And why this is relevant to me is if Cora's not coming back, you want to replace him with the best possible candidate. And I don't know anybody better than Terry Francona. I really don't. Since his run with the Red Sox, he had some bad years with the Phillies. They weren't really positioned very well at the time he was hired. But then when he comes from the Red Sox, he had, I think it was up until the 2020 season, and there was only 1 year break in there. He took a year off in between Boston and Cleveland. He only had one losing season in that stretch. There was a 500 season in there, but this is a guy, I think, even at a relatively advanced age, he'll be 66 years old next year. I think he could manage in any era with any crop of talent. I think he would get the respect of his players. He would create a positive environment for them, an environment where, you know, the clubhouse is going to be good and it's going to be conducive to solid performances. We saw so many young players come up during his era. Pedroia, Ellsbury, Clay Buchholz had some good years in there. John Lester. So many. Arguably, we developed more young talent in the Francona era than we have any other, except for maybe in the last year or two. But I would go get him. The major hurdle that would prevent that is how he left, being thrown under the bus, being called a drug addict, essentially, which apparently mostly had to do with Larry Lucchino. Now, John Henry didn't try to smooth things over. As far as we know, there's no relationship there between them. But there wasn't a relationship between John Henry and Theo Epstein until this past winter. That was a bit frosty. So I don't know if Henry would try to smooth things over. It would take a minimum of that to happen for Francona to come back. But this is a team that is positioned fairly well to start winning more sooner than later. And I think it would be attractive for a guy like him to come in. Whether or not they'll mend those fences is a different story. But anybody else you bring in is going to be a wild card. So I just think if you want to flip the narrative as an organization, a huge step in doing that would be to bring a guy like Tito back.
Jeremy.
If you want to flip the narrative, sign Cora. Commit to him. Commit to the roster. Commit the dollars and sign Alex Cora. That's committing. Otherwise, I do agree with you, Terry. So, number one, I read Terry's book, Terry Francona's book. It was wildly entertaining. It was a peel-the-curtain-back moment from that era of Red Sox baseball. And if you haven't read it, it's absolutely worth it. I did it as a book on tape and in the car. I mean, I'm sitting in my driveway finishing chapters. That's how good it was. So, you know, that's, I think Terry Francona is a Hall of Famer. I don't think there's going to be a lot of disagreement there, but he's that type of manager. And as to Henry's involvement, if it was Lucchino who alleged the prescription pill issue, and I think there was another thing related to Fidelity, maybe, that they...
He was going through a divorce or something.
Yeah, that was it was so wrong. It was so wrong on so many levels. I hated everything about it. Like, he's the best manager that the Red Sox have had in the last 100 years, and you treat him that way on the way out. It's despicable. It's absolutely despicable. Now, with that said, look, guys, Henry's not involved with the team. He's doing the Roush racing, and he's doing the soccer and the hockey and whatever their next purchase is going to be, hopefully not the Celtics. It's Breslow's job, in my opinion, to show him a path to future success. And that is that Henry's committed this amount of money to us. It's not like it used to be, Terry, but Francona, not our Terry. But this, you know, and here's what we have. Here's what we're looking at. This is what we're going to do. Because otherwise, Alex is, by leaving, is showing that he doesn't believe it. So now you have to convince Terry Francona that this is what we're like. It doesn't make any sense, because if you can show it to Terry Francona, show it to Alex Cora, because he's younger. He's been in the clubhouse. He knows the organization. Until this year, he's really wanted to be here. He's thankful for bringing him back after the suspension, which he said many times how thankful his family is for that. Now, if we take all that out and Cora does leave, I love the move. I love the move. It doesn't need to be looking 10 years down the road. It can be a 3-year play, because if they do what I hope they're going to do, which is buy assets that have future years, future years that are controllable, then we're looking to win a World Series in the next 3 to 5 years. And who's better than Terry Francona to do that in Boston? He's already proven he can do it multiple times. So if he's there, he's healthy, which I'm always rooting for him, and he wants to manage, and he wants to manage a competitive program. I love the move. I love it.
So Ringo 1256, Jim, I think that in order for something like this to happen, there would have to be a major mea culpa. And I don't know if the Boston Red Sox brass would be in a position to literally basically pull their own pants down and say, we want to apologize to Terry Francona for how that went down, because it was poor. It was inappropriate to speak on matters that were personal. We don't do it about them, and it's a shame that things came out about him. That being said, I would love Terry Francona to come back to Boston for as many years as he wants to continue managing. I think he would love the opportunity to get some payback against the New York Yankees. This is a team that, since that 2016 run where he went to the World Series and unfortunately didn't get it, he didn't get that win, he has been knocked out by the Yankees 3 times, and then obviously that other one by the Houston Astros back in 2018. He's been at the helm of some of the best teams in baseball over the last couple decades. He currently sits 13th all time in major league wins as a manager. He's 50 off of 2000. It would be amazing to see him come back and maybe put something together with Boston. I love it more and more. I get where Jeremy's coming from about if you're going to commit to Alex Cora. Otherwise, I absolutely agree with you. And I think it'd be amazing. But in order for something like that, where Tito would have to say, yeah, okay, cool, I'll come back, we're going to have to apologize. Because the players would absolutely love him to come back. I wouldn't be surprised if you'd be able to even convince some of his former players to come back and, you know, be instructors during spring training or do something with him. And I actually haven't read the book, but Jeremy, I'll talk to you off the air because I'd like to hear more about it. I might buy it myself. But yeah, I mean, I absolutely love it. I would love for him to come back. And I'm not sure how much money it would take to bring Tito to Boston. But I think he's going to be able to take these players to a whole nother level if that's in the cards. Jeremy, why don't you go first, and then Terry, we'll bring you in next.
Yeah, I forgot, and this is important. During the Wakefield weekend, we all remember the Curt Schilling thing. Francona was in the city at the time. I read this about 3 days ago. He was in the city and did not partake. That does not bode well for this scenario. And I don't remember exactly when Lucchino passed away. I don't remember if it was before or after that. But regardless, that's a telltale sign here. So I'll let Terry go on that.
I think Lucchino passed after that. And Francona was here. He went to like all the private parties and met with everyone and was a presence in that regard. He was not on the field when the ceremonies took place. Larry Lucchino was the biggest of all the evils in the Francona drama, you know, in 2011 when the collapse happened and then beer and chicken and all that. You know, Henry didn't, like I said, he could have smoothed things over. Apparently hasn't done it. I mean, we can't say for sure one way or the other, but most likely he hasn't done it. I just want to point this out just to hammer home my earlier point. So 04 through the almost the very end of 2011, that was the golden era of John Henry's tenure. Were there some disappointments in the years in between? Yeah, sure. But you won two titles in that time frame. The vibe was good. You know, it was a fun era to be a Red Sox fan. And we have won a couple of titles since then. But Francona's firing was the first blemish of the John Henry era. Nothing was nearly as controversial before that. You had Epstein leave briefly. He came back a month or two later. Everything was fine. So you had the Francona thing happen in 2011. 3 years later, you had an epic PR disaster with how the John Lester thing played out. Then at various points in 2018 and 2019, you had a lot of drama around Mookie Betts. In 2018 and 19, they couldn't get it done in terms of an extension. That was a very public thing. Ownership took a lot of heat. Then in 2020, they ended up trading him. Still to this day, not a popular move. And then Dave Dombrowski being fired kind of unceremoniously in 2019 was a bit controversial as well, especially where they didn't even have a press conference to address it. They didn't, you know, they didn't go through their reasoning on why that was necessary. So those are the biggest blunders of the John Henry tenure. And of course, the last few years have been frustrating in terms of an operations standpoint, not getting solid pitching and missing on a lot of key free agents. But as I said earlier, if you want to start to flip the narrative, bringing back Terry Francona is a great start to that. John Lester came back and was a guest instructor in this year's spring training, and Alex Cora was the guy behind that. It wasn't an ownership thing, but that was a step in the right direction. I don't think the Mookie Betts thing will ever be resolved. I don't think the Dave Dombrowski thing will ever be resolved. But I will say this. I think the Phillies are the clear front runner now, now that the Yankees have slipped so badly. If John Henry were to just have a 20 or 30 minute conversation with Dave Dombrowski, should they win it? And, you know, should he congratulate him and say, man, you've done a good job and I'm sorry for how things went. I'm just saying John Henry can right a lot of wrongs this year and put a lot of it to bed. And with Terry Francona, you instantly gain back tons of credibility. You know your players are going to play for him. And I'll just point this last thing out. I've said it on the podcast several times, but as great as 2004 was, coming back and winning four straight against the Yankees, reversing the curse, the 2007 postseason, you had a similar situation against the Indians at the time. You had to win three straight against them. Those were great managing performances by Francona, but his best of his entire career was that run in 2016 with that joke of a rotation because everybody got hurt. He didn't have Carrasco. I forget that young kid's name that just never really amounted to anything, but he was hurt that year. Trevor Bauer had a terrible year, hadn't really had his breakout season yet. He was kind of looking like a busted prospect at that time. And then, of course, he messed up his hand with the drone after that first postseason start. He had so much.
Were you talking about Clevinger?
No. Well, Clevinger was hurt too, I think. He wasn't.
He was hurt.
Yeah, he wasn't on that. No, it was. It started with an S. I could look it up.
I don't remember
in a
now.
Second, but
Salazar,
yes, like he had tons of hype coming up, but he was hurt.
He was fantastic.
So yeah, Salazar was hurt. Clevinger was hurt. Carrasco was hurt. So all Francona had for bona fide starter was Kluber, which was a great guy to have at the time. Then he had Bauer, and then he had, I think, Mike Tomlin, who was like a fringe number five guy, was more like a spot starter, basically like a Cooper Criswell type guy. And so, and he gets to extra innings of game seven of the World Series against Joe Madden's stacked Cubs. So I thought that was Francona's finest postseason performance, despite coming up a bit short. But I'd bring him back over some nerd that Breslow is ultimately going to hire.
Yeah, I mean, not much more to add to that one. Jeremy, anything else you want to add? Right on.
Wait, quick trivia question before we do wrap.
Sure.
Who had the better batting average in their career? They both hit lefty, by the way. So between Terry Francona and Alex Cora, who had the better batting average throughout their respective careers?
I'm gonna guess Francona.
Alex Cora had more home runs, which wasn't a ton, 35. Neither one of them was a power hitter, basically. But Francona's batting average was 31 points higher than Alex Cora's. So interesting enough. And another fun fact, Francona and I have the same first and middle name. Ironically, both are spelled differently, but Terrence John is both of our first and middle names. So
the more you know, Terry.
Where do you think Francona is from? Related. Guess what state he's from?
Who?
Francona. Where was he born? Which state was he born in?
Arkansas.
You'll never guess.
No. Arkansas. Ohio.
Aberdeen, South Dakota. So.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that was.
I told you, you'd never guess, right?
You set us up with that, Terry.
I did, yeah. I wouldn't have guessed that. I would have guessed Alaska before that.
Yeah, that would have been too far-fetched. That's going to wrap it for all the bastards. Everyone have a great one. Take care.